What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, alongside the Fantasy Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano, and the Fantasy Viper, Graham Barfield. And hey, the band's back together.
Yeah, man.
First time in a few weeks.
Yeah.
Feels so good.
I know.
Yeah. So Monday, I had to move suddenly again, like second time in 10 months because of another mold issue. And so we moved over the weekend, and then we locked ourselves out of the house last night. And 2.5 hours later, we got back in. So, yeah.
You've had a nice year of struggles with your home
environment. Oh, my gosh. Hopefully this is it, though. Hopefully this is it. I moved down into the South Bay, and there's actually a lot of people. Amber Theo Harris is down there. Akbar's down there. Lindsay Rose is down there.
Yeah, so. Except your zip code and Akbar's zip code are a little bit different. Like,
you're right. He's Manhattan Beach, which is where the fancy pantses all live.
See,
and Redondo Beach is like the people who want to be in Manhattan Beach.
Akbar lives next to famous rappers and stuff. Like,
yeah,
you know, like he literally one day on taping the show just casually dropped that like he lives next door to Kendrick Lamar.
Oh, well then,
yeah,
damn,
and
exactly
his. He has another neighbor who apparently writes reviews for sports cars magazines. And so like every few weeks he has got a new sick car in his driveway that he's test driving.
I have a sneaking suspicion that I actually have a neighbor like that too, because we have a shared parking garage, right? And there's always a really cool new car next to me. I mean, this week I think it was, or 2 weeks ago, it was like the brand new Toyota Supra.
Okay.
I was like, I mean, how do you change your car up every week?
So quick.
I know.
Then last week it was a Nissan GTR.
Wow.
Like, yeah, I was like, I mean.
That's awesome.
Must be nice.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's quite a few people like that out here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a perfect place for it.
Here, I'll pay you to drive this sick car.
Yeah.
And then a month later, I'll pay you to drive another sick car. That's pretty good.
I'm just excited there's a free shuttle to LAX near my apartment. That's it.
That's why you moved down there.
That's exactly why I moved.
That's why you moved
free
down
shuttle to and from the
we're
airport.
Probably, yeah. You're in Inglewood, right?
Yes,
so we're probably pretty
we're not far.
Close.
We're not far.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. We got a lot to talk about because there has been some coaching movement since the last time we
talked. And by the way,
yes, we're going to get your thoughts on that because
look at this. Look at Eddie. I got my Cowboys bat back on. I'm happy.
We did not have a chance to talk to you. You weren't here when the news became official. So we're going to get your thoughts on that. We'll also look at the divisional playoff games this weekend and what you may think about doing. In terms of your DFS plays and your playoff challenge plays, because Fabs, some of ours went belly up this week.
I mean, that's one thing that I didn't get to talk to you guys about Monday.
Yeah.
While I was dead on about the Titans, I was dead wrong about the Saints. What the heck happened there?
Yeah, I think a lot of people were wrong about this.
My goodness gracious. Yeah,
absolutely. Plus, there was a little bit of, I won't say shenanigans. There's some things that went on in the DFS community.
Again.
So we'll kick that around a little bit too as well. I mean, there's, to me, a humorous angle to the whole thing. But, we'll see. I think a lot of people aren't thinking it's quite as funny. But anyway, before we dive into all of that, we'll go behind the glass and talk to our faithful producer, Senior Edward L. Murphy, Esquire. Murph, what's up?
Yeah, speaking of coaches, I thought it was this close to getting
Jason
Garrett. That would have been some material for the pod. But instead, the Giants go and hire pretty much an unknown. Very, very strange day for any New York Giants fan. A lot of ups and downs with the Matt Rhule stuff. Then it's, oh no, it's going to be Jason Garrett. Then it's this unknown guy, and you're kind of like, I don't know what to make of it. He's from a really good coaching tree with Saban and Belichick, and it is. There is no offseason in the NFL because there's constantly something going on that you have to focus on with your team. So
I know. I always laugh when people ask me what I do in the offseason. Like, what do you mean? What is this offseason you talk about?
Yeah, you're not playing any games.
Right.
I'm researching this guy's life and saying, okay, so that's where he went to high school, and that's where he did in college. Okay, that's where he played. All right. Oh, does he know how to coach quarterbacks? Or like, you're just constantly researching and doing stuff. So
right.
It was definitely an interesting day. This is one of the more memorable coaching like hiring seasons I could recall.
Yeah. And officially, it's not even done yet.
Yeah, the Browns have their pick of the litter here.
Yeah. So anyway, let's get into it then. Let's do some news.
Let's do the news.
Well, let's start actually by backing up because as we mentioned on Monday, the Dallas Cowboys have hired Mike McCarthy as their head coach. Our resident Cowboy fan, Fabs, was not here for that. So we all, with bated breath, have been waiting to hear your thoughts on the new head man down there in Dallas.
I'm excited. I mean, it was a safe decision. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. Because McCarthy, you know, had a ton of experience, obviously, had a nice run there in Green Bay, you know, got to the Super Bowl championship with Aaron Rodgers. And I like the move. I know I was like, I was, you know, Urban Meyer, you know, this kind of thing. And then, you know, there were some, I was like thinking, maybe John Harbaugh, you know. But the Cowboys decided to go with a experienced head coach who has had a lot of success in the National Football League. I can't argue with that. And from a fantasy perspective, I mean, I like this move. Offensive-minded coach, this should be really good for the development, the continued development of Dak Prescott as a quarterback because, again, McCarthy, despite what may or may not have happened with his relationship with Aaron Rodgers, you know, he ended up coaching a guy who's going to go to the Hall of Fame, you know, 5 years after he retires from this league. And I also love the fact that Mike Nolan is going to be on the defensive side. Mm-hmm. I actually sent him a message over the weekend congratulating him. He had done some stuff for us here at NFL Network, and yep, he's a really good guy. And I feel like under his tutelage, you're going to see Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch sort of even, you know, really even take their game to the next level. We hired Fossil as a special teams coach. There's just a lot to like. I'm excited about it. I really am, because the Cowboys have a ton of talent, and now McCarthy gets the keys, you know, to this engine and to this car, and I really think that this engine's going to start running on all cylinders in 2020.
I'm interested to see where, you know, because there was a report that came out last night that they're going to keep Kellen Moore as the offensive coordinator.
Yes.
And that'll be interesting, because obviously that leaves a little bit of continuity behind with Dak and all these receivers, that maybe Mike McCarthy can get up to speed of what they've been doing and kind of build off of that. Because Kellen Moore, to start the year, I thought he called some pretty good games until Jason Garrett decided to be Jason Garrett and took over.
Right. Yeah. Well, again, and I had heard from a pretty reliable source that Jerry had told Jason, just don't meddle with Kellen Moore for the first few games and let him do his thing. And then I don't know what happened there, but eventually we all know it sort of went downhill. So we'll see. I mean, I'm happy with it. You know, like, you know, Eddie is dealing with a guy who, you know, people don't know a whole heck of a lot about. Of course, you talk about the whole, you know, Bill Belichick tree and that kind of thing. So that always sort of, you know, gives fans hope when a Patriot coach is hired by a team, even though he's really an unknown. But I know what I'm getting with Mike McCarthy. A few years back, I was in St. Louis for the Big League Impact draft with Adam Wainwright, and I actually met McCarthy, Aaron Rodgers, and Jordy Nelson. And McCarthy was a really nice guy. Like, talked about how his kids play fantasy football and all this kind of stuff. He was,
yeah,
really,
everybody
he was
said
a really
Jason
nice
Garrett
guy.
Was a really nice guy.
No, I get it. But and Jason Garrett is a tremendous guy, and I wish him all the luck in the world. I just didn't want him to coach my team anymore.
So it's going to be interesting. I know that I think the initial reaction, it sounded like from fans and media down in Dallas, so that it was the safe hire. And I think everybody is cautiously optimistic going into that. And you did mention, Graham, it looks like Kellen Moore is going to stay. I know that, you know, as of yesterday, he wasn't 100% on that. Right. He was thinking about maybe taking a job at the University of Washington, which gets him closer to where he grew up, that sort of thing. But it looks like he is going to stay in Dallas, and we'll see how he and Mike McCarthy sort of how they vibe and how they mesh.
Well, that brain trust, and if McCarthy truly has, like, taken a step forward in terms of his, like, just wanting to be a better coach and actually, you know, dives deep in analytics.
Right.
It could be a pretty interesting offensive brain trust, because you mentioned it. The talent on their offense is just,
it's sick
every
man.
Single year. I mean, they were the top passing offense in the NFL this year and did not make the playoffs. That cannot happen.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, it's mind-boggling how that happens. Staying in the division, though, as Eddie mentioned, the big news for the New York Football Giants is that they have hired a new head coach, Patriots assistant Joe Judge, who was their special teams coordinator / wide receiver coach. I know everybody has sort of focused on the wide receiver coach portion of his duties because, well, the Patriots wide receivers weren't very good this past year. But I don't even know. I think the big thing with Joe Judge is that no one really knows what to expect from him. You know, people look at what the Patriots special teams did, and they were very good over the past four or five seasons. But in terms of everything else, he is so much of an unknown. They're going into this season, or the Giants are going into the season with talent. They, you know, Daniel Jones is obviously the future quarterback. Saquon Barkley is there. They've got some good pieces at wide receiver and tight end, especially once Evan Engram gets healthy. But, I mean, Graham, there's so much that's unknown here right
now. The only thing we know about Judge right now is that he's spent roughly the last 10 years under Saban and Bill Belichick. He spent three seasons with Bama back from 2009 with the Crimson Tide, and, you know, since then he was, you know, with Belichick and company for the last couple of years. It's weird, though, because, like, you know, this was completely outside of the box, because most people are expecting McDaniels to get a job, and he very well could still get a job with the Browns or Starnecchia, and it ended up being Joe Judge. I really don't have a lot. I mean, because we just really don't have a lot of information. I mean, there's pretty much no analysis that we can give right now, just because it's a completely unknown hire. And you know, I don't. Dave Gettleman is a mystery to me. I'll put it that way. Dave Gettleman is just he's a mystery to me, man. Like, he is fighting for his job, obviously, and he's definitely taking an outside of the box approach here with Joe Judge.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. We talked on Monday, Graham, that you sort of had two ends of the spectrum when you looked at Cleveland versus Carolina, right? In Cleveland, you have pieces there, but you've got an ownership situation that has been problematic in terms of trying to win football games. In Carolina, you have an owner who seems committed to trying to win, to trying to you know, do this. You know, they want to bring in people who are deep into analytics and to have, you know, all these sort of forward-thinking folks. So you have an ownership that has the deep pockets and seems to have sort of the innovation to want to win. But the pieces are kind of meh. I feel like the Giants are sort of in between there, right? You've got some pieces. You've got decent ownership. There's just, you know, I guess we just wait and see.
And Gettleman, for better or worse, this past year is pretty clear he didn't know what he wanted to do, whether he wanted to tank, whether he wanted to try and play to win. It seems like he did a bit of both. You know, the Golden Tate signing was a little bit bizarre to me. You know, letting Odell Beckham go, then paying Tate all of this money. Now, they have a bunch of weapons. I mean, we talked about it at the end of the year. I mean, the Giants are loaded with weapons. And if Daniel Jones can take a step forward and not fumble so much and maybe make a few better decisions,
he's going to be a big
they're going to be looking really
season.
Good. It's just who is going to run this offense now? Because Judge, I mean, theoretically, is I guess, the CEO type now. And, I mean, he's a receivers coach. With no offensive coordinator background at all.
Yeah, that. So I guess we're going to wait and see, because he's going to select his own coaches.
I think it was clarified, though, that the Garrett news was they are thinking about him as OC.
OC, yeah.
Oh, is that what? See, I thought they were thinking about him as head coach, and then they sort of pulled that back once they hired Joe Judge.
Marcus is right. It was they requested to interview him Sunday night. And by Monday, they kind of knew they were going to hire Judge. So the OC stuff was actually wrong. It was that they're trying to hire him. They wanted an interview for him.
That's what originally made sense.
Right.
To me.
Yeah.
With the stink around Garrett, though, I mean, do you really think he's going to get a head coaching job immediately?
No. He definitely would need an OC job.
I would think so. And if you remember, too, when the Cowboys hired him to be the OC, like he ended up being the hot name. He almost ended up being the Ravens head coach.
Yeah.
And so I feel like Garrett almost needs to get back into that OC role to sort of maybe build himself back up around NFL.
Garrett needs to get
franchises.
Back into the OC role just so he can prove he can do more than clap.
Yes.
There's no way that the New York Giants fan base would have accepted Jason Garrett as the head coach.
Or even offensive
or even the OC.
OC would be tough. But then again, anything probably is better than Mike Shula as quarterback's coach and an offensive coordinator, but the Garrett head coach would have been a tough sell.
We'll see. We'll see what happens though with the Giants OC. The team has said Judge will pick his staff, so we await to see how that works out. The Carolina Panthers have a new head coach, Matt Rhule, coming up from Baylor.
That dude got paid
there.
Bro.
Oh man,
he got paid. I mean, what, 7 years, $62 million?
That's a lot of scratch for a guy who's coming into the NFL.
That's on top of his buyout. I
mean, yeah, exactly.
His buyout at Baylor, which I don't know if I've seen the number, but it has to be.
It was six or seven. I think it was $6 or $7 million too.
Yeah. So
Panthers all in or pot commit. I mean, they are in on 78 plus.
Yeah, dude.
And nice work if you can get it.
78 plus million. Yeah.
So Matt Rhule takes over as the head coach for the Carolina Panthers. Now, his calling card has been defense.
Right.
So I don't know what this means for the Panthers offensively, Fabs. I mean, they still have questions about what happens with Cam Newton, who their quarterback is
going
to be.
That's Matt Rhule's biggest decision.
Right.
He's got to come in and figure out who the hell his quarterback's
going to
be.
We know they've got Christian McCaffrey, you know, DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel are going to be there. That's kind of it. Like, everything else is kind of a question mark.
I know.
Right now.
And, I mean, you know, Kyle Allen showed some flashes, but... And Will Greer looked terrible. I mean, like, I don't know if Will Greer is going to ever get an opportunity to be a starter in the NFL. I know it was a very, very small sample size, but he did not look good. But, you know, Carolina brought this guy in because he's turned programs around, right? I mean, Temple, they went 10-2 during the regular season in Rhule's third year. Baylor, obviously, turned that program around too. So, and he's, I guess, big into like player development and sports science. That's sort of part of his reputation and what the Panthers are going to get with him. So, we'll see. But yeah, we have to see what they do on the offensive side of things because there's a lot of question marks, clearly. But they do have talent in place. I mean, they've got the best running back in fantasy football. They've got one of the best young wide receivers in fantasy football. Curtis Samuel is very good as well. And Ian Thomas is an up-and-coming tight end, assuming that Greg Olsen is going to be out. They need to work on the offensive line. But there's pieces in place. But, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, what is their quarterback situation going to be?
The Panthers are in this for the long haul, man. Like, you never see coaching contracts over 4 or 5+ years.
No, that's a lot of money, dude.
It's a lot of money, and it's a long time. And, you know, it kind of makes sense, though. Rhule has a background of – he's coached, like, almost every position. If you go back and look at his coaching history, I mean, not only has he been, like, an offensive coordinator before he was a head coach, he coached, like, D-line and stuff. So he's been all over the place. And I guess, you know, Dave Tepper, their new owner in Carolina, is looking for sort of someone – you know, like, I guess fresh new blood would be a good way to describe it, obviously, but he's still looking for a CEO type, you know,
right.
Somebody that can come in and understand all facets of the game. And Rhule is certainly that. Now, I will be the Panthers assistant and offensive coordinating staff. That is what I'm looking forward to most, to see what they do there, because there is a lot of upside, as you mentioned, with DJ Moore, Christian McCaffrey, and especially Curtis Samuel too. I think he's kind of been the forgotten man there a little bit as a equally talented receiver to DJ Moore.
Yep.
You mentioned the length of the Matt Rhule contract, and it is still sort of unusual to see a coaching contract that long. But I wonder, look, Matt Rhule's got 7 years. I mean, we made a big deal out of John Gruden getting 10 years. I'm not going to say that this is the wave of the future, but I do wonder if you are an owner with some patience, whether or not you're going to see more of this, because suddenly, if you're a head coach with this sort of stability and job security,
right,
you can make some decisions that you can let them play out a little bit.
I also wonder if the Panthers and Dave Tepper felt like they needed to be very aggressive with Rhule, because Rhule was... he was linked up with the Giants for the last month.
They didn't want him to get on the plane.
And Eddie, coming from your eye? Mad Dog Russo destroyed Gettleman about not getting Rhule.
It's a bad look. I want a Rhule, but you know, it is what it is.
I mean, I think that's maybe the other facet of playing at hand here is that the Panthers just felt like they needed to buy Rhule, and they did. They did.
Essentially,
they got
their
man.
Essentially, did. But I think now, if you are Matt Rhule and you know you've got a 7-year contract, you can break this thing down in Carolina and try to rebuild it, because you know that you're not going to get pushed out in 2 or 3 years. I mean, it's similar to what we've seen in Oakland, now Las Vegas, with John Gruden, that you can trade away a guy like Khalil Mack and you can trade away an Amari Cooper, because you got 10 years. You got 10 years to figure this thing out. And, you know, I know that not all owners are that patient, but, you know, you wonder. Let's move from the head coaching to the assistant coaches there that are moving, maybe staying in place. We mentioned Kellen Moore is going to stay as the offensive coordinator there in Dallas. In Washington, Scott Turner looks like he's going to be the guy who's the OC there for Ron Rivera. Shane Steichen is expected to come back as the Chargers offensive coordinator.
I like that.
I like that a lot, too, because we saw when Steichen took over, that offense kind of got going a little bit more. Now, Phillip Rivers sort of had his stumbles down the stretch. Mm-hmm.
That's putting it nicely.
But that ground attack with Gordon and Eckler, I mean...
That's so much better.
And, boy, I mean, if Eckler is the featured back in that offense next season, like, is he a top 8 pick?
I mean, he's easily first round,
right? I mean, he's a first rounder.
Easily first rounder.
I mean, that's going to be very interesting.
Chargers have a very interesting offseason ahead of them between who they're going to pay out of Gordon and Eckler.
Yep.
I think it'll be Eckler. And what they're going to do with Phil Rivers.
Yep. And back to Scott Turner, you know, of course, you know, I'm very familiar with North Turner because he was the Cowboys offensive coordinator for years. And I mean, and he's always been a guy that in fantasy you've kind of liked.
Right.
As a coordinator or a head coach, because typically he's going to get the most out of his running backs. He's going to get the most out of his tight ends. So, and Rivera brought Turner in because, well, familiarity, because, of course, he was the guy, he's the quarterback's coach for Carolina. Mm-hmm. And he's 37 years old, a young guy. And I like this hire for Darius Geis. And if Darius can stay healthy, I really feel like, depending on what happens with Adrian Peterson, which I don't know if they're going to bring him back or not. You know, he's long in the tooth is sort of, I mean.
Still balling, though.
He is. But
it's incredible.
If Darius could ever stay healthy, man, with Turner calling the shots, if he's going to be sort of a mirror of what his dad has done over the years, you can look back at North Turner's history, and he's coached some hell. He's great running backs during his time.
I thought Scott Turner did a really good job with that Panthers offense. He was hamstrung with his quarterback situation, losing Cam Newton, having to kind of push Kyle Allen through, and then at the end of the year, as you mentioned, with Will Greer, I mean, that took a lot of wind out of his sails. But I thought he did a good job otherwise.
I agree, and they kind of had to manufacture this past season on the fly, because obviously they were expecting Cam to be back and 100% off his shoulder injury from 2018, and you know, just got unlucky in the preseason with the foot injury. So they kind of had to like put this thing together. And Kyle Allen, for better or worse, I mean, he definitely, you know, I think as the sample size grew larger, we learned that Kyle Allen is probably not going to be a starting quarterback in the NFL, but he had some big games and they schemed him to success in some games this year.
Yeah. Speaking of quarterbacks, we got what I think a lot of people expected. Tua Tagovailoa has declared for the 2020 NFL draft. He is leaving the University of Alabama. He had his season unfortunately cut short because of a hip injury, but right now he is a top three, top five prospect in the draft. I know that, you know, in terms of maybe redraft leagues and that sort of thing, his value may be sort of limited because we don't know what his injury situation is going to be next year. But Fabs, I would think that dynasty leagues, keeper leagues, Tua's going to have quite a bit of value this year.
Here's a question for you. Do the Redskins, who have the number two overall pick in the draft, decide this guy's too good for us to pass up and they end up taking him even though they took Haskins last season?
Sort of like what the Cardinals did with Josh Rosen versus
correct.
Kyler Murray?
Yes, yes.
Both the Redskins and the Lions are in very interesting positions to be able to like basically set their price and make Miami move up, because mm-hmm. if they're in on Haskins at number two, they would theoretically want to maybe move down and get a, you know, king's ransom for that pick. So yes. Someone can move up and get two. It's pretty clear. You know, I think as the dust is settled with Tua's hip injury, it's pretty clear, and he's probably still going to be a top 10, top 15 pick.
Oh, I would think so.
I would be shocked if he fell out of the top 15.
Poor maybe. Josh Rosen.
Well,
yeah, I mean,
that dream is dead.
In some ways, poor Josh Rosen, but in other ways, he hasn't done anything.
I get it.
I say this as a guy who I waved the flag.
Same here.
Josh Rosen.
Yeah.
You know what's going to happen next season? Ryan Fitzpatrick can be back with the Dolphins.
Of course.
Yeah, he will.
Quarterback to open the season.
It would make too much.
It's going
to
be awesome.
It would make so much sense to have Fitzpatrick and Tua, because then you could just wait, you know, when a few
exactly.
fits.
I know, right.
And wait until Tua is 100%. You mentioned, though, I mean, with Rosen, if Ryan Fitzpatrick comes in and makes the offense look that good, make Devontae Parker that good.
Josh Rosen's never getting off the bench.
It's not going to happen.
Although when I do my, you know, way too early rankings for 2020, Devontae Parker is going to be really hard to rank because he's awesome. I don't know who's going to throw him the football next
year. Yeah, he is. Going
I
to
hope
be.
It's Fitzpatrick.
And the Dolphins are definitely in the market to get some receiver help too, because their depth is pretty pretty minuscule.
And it is a good wide receiver draft class too. Mm. I mean, I know we'll get into
very
it a
good
bit
later. Year to need a wide receiver.
Yeah. We'll get into it obviously as the weeks and months go along. But this is a very good wide receiver draft class. So there we go. Last bit of news here: Tom Brady reportedly played through a foot injury late in the season. This is to go along with the elbow injury that a lot of people knew about that had sort of been nagging him most of the year. He did put out a statement, I believe it was on Instagram.
Yeah, a very lengthy one.
Very long one. I admittedly haven't read through the whole thing, but the gist of it is he's not done. He thinks he has more to offer. He thinks he can be better next year. He wants to keep playing, whether that is in New England or somewhere else. Graham and I talked about on Monday what it might look like if he's not in New England, where he could go to
really,
be productive.
It'll look really weird. It'll be like Emmett Smith wearing a Cardinals jersey.
Yeah, I was thinking about that because I was having a Twitter chat with our pal Rumford Johnny, who is a smart guy, good fantasy guy, big Patriots fan as well. And one of the things I did come up with was, if he were to leave, and I'm not saying this just because I'm a 49er fan, but seeing him in a Niner uniform would be less jarring than seeing him, say, like in a Charger uniform. Like Tom Brady in a Charger uniform would look just weird.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because the Patriots wear red occasionally that seeing him in a red jersey wouldn't be quite as bad. I don't know what it is.
Did that help the transition of Joe Montana from San Francisco to KC because it's two shades of red for you?
No, what helped the transition of Joe Montana to
Steve
KC
Young?
Steve Young. Right. That's what helped that.
I think you're just trying to reprise the most handsome quarterbacking room in the
I mean,
NFL.
Right? Between Brady and Jimmy G again, it would be amazing.
But I mean, like, then where do the Patriots go at quarterback?
That's the big question.
Jarrett Stidham?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, that's a long way to fall from the greatest quarterback in the history of the National Football League.
The Patriots aren't known for trading up in draft. They tend to trade down. They tend to stockpile picks. But do they try to make a move and see if, like, I mean, is it possible for them to move up enough to get a Justin Herbert potentially? Do they pray that somebody like Tua? I mean, Tua's not going to fall far enough.
Not that far.
Because they've got to make a decision. And I don't know that there's anybody in that building that can be the next guy for them right now.
Just
not.
Very it'll look really weird for him to be in any other jersey.
Oh, absolutely.
And ultimately, hindsight's 20/20. Maybe it would have been, great for him to, go out on top. They beat the Rams. They win the Super Bowl. John Elway-esque, Randy Cross-esque. I always say that because he's a good dude. Going out on top. But now, I feel like, after this year and, people are talking about, Brady used to make his wide receivers great. And this year everyone complained that his wide receivers weren't any good. And maybe because he's 42 years old and he's lost a step that this is sort of the start of, his statistical downfall. He's never going to lose the legacy because he's the GOAT. But I just really would hate to see him go somewhere else and be an average NFL quarterback. I don't know.
That's just me, though. The one thing I think about is, and I wasn't alive for this, but people older than me always refer to Willie Mays playing with the Mets. And they always talk about Willie Mays, who had been so great for so long with the Giants, playing for the Mets and falling down in center field. And it just, for people who had watched him for so many years, just kind of cringing at that sight. And I think that's what people are...
We've seen it so many times beyond Willie Mays, too. I mean, our sports stars that have just these illustrious
hung around.
And
just
hang around too long. With Brady, though, I mean, I think it's just pure competitive fire that
absolutely.
He just doesn't want to give it up, even though he has no, I mean, theoretically, he has nothing more to play for, more accolades.
Nothing to prove, nothing at all.
Yeah.
The Chargers are one of the teams that keeps popping up as a rumored destination there for.
We talked about that on Monday, too. And to me, that doesn't make much sense because it would be hustling.
You go
backwards.
From one old quarterback
to
another older quarterback.
Older quarterback. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But so now, though, if.
You know what, though?
Yes.
Chargers are trying to get butts in the seats, bro.
Yeah. But I also brought that up, too, though. What will put butts in the seats consistently is winning games.
Yes.
The Tom Brady, the shiny new Tom Brady toy, that wears off in a town. There are lots of superstars in Los Angeles, right? So, you don't have to pay to come out and watch one. You go to the Grove and see somebody walk by. I saw freaking Walton Goggins from the Righteous Gemstones walking down Abbot Kinney last week. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah, when I was at the Grove last, Lady Gaga was there.
Right, exactly.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Now, did she have 700 people around her protecting her?
Yes.
I just seems strange to me that Lady Gaga's walking around the Grove.
At the mall, right?
She was at a store, a pop-up stop.
That's got to be the biggest one. My biggest celebrity sighting in Los Angeles was years and years ago. It was Arnold Schwarzenegger at a Pinkberry in Brentwood.
Yeah, I think I saw Tyra Banks at a
And I saw Sylvester Stallone at a restaurant in Beverly Hills. And the one thing I remember about him the most was that he's all upper body and he's got these skinny stick legs.
Terminator's just like us.
Yeah.
He likes frozen yogurt.
He does.
Yeah. No, I saw Jimmy Smits in an In-N-Out once too.
Jimmy Smits.
He likes double doubles.
Nice, man. NYPD Blue, one of my favorite shows of all time.
There you go.
Bobby Simone.
Real quick though about Tom Brady. if he really has been dealing with these injuries, right? If he gets healthy, his foot's okay, his elbow's okay, do we feel differently about him, or does it really matter where he's playing and who he's
It's depending on who he's going to throw the ball to, because I do think a lot of the Patriots poor, just absolutely terrible offense over the last, especially the last like 2 to 3 months of the season. They had nobody to stretch the field.
Right.
You know, they just didn't have anybody. I mean, Philip Dorsett had some nice games to start the year, and then that fell apart. Yeah. And Josh Gordon, you know, fell apart, and they tried to make AB work, and that fell apart. N'Keal Harry was up and down all
year. I wonder where they would have ended up if they kept Antonio Brown. I mean, maybe he would have been suspended and unable to play regardless, but and, I really wonder.
And by the way, I mean, I think, if anything, this just also cements Rob Gronkowski's legacy. Because look at what that offense looked like all year long.
Yeah,
even without Gronkowski at like 70%, which he was in 2018, his final year, the offense was just clearly not
maybe,
the same.
Maybe the greatest tight end to ever play.
Also, props to Dave Damashek, who always does his Jenga piece theory. And he always said that Gronk was the Jenga piece there in New England. You pull him out of there, thing falls apart. Yeah. So there you go. All right, okay, that was a pretty long news section, but that's pretty much everything you need to know.
That was the news.
All right, let's run through the divisional playoffs because, well, we're not going to have another podcast before those games kick off on Saturday. So let's start. Vikings at 49ers. The Vikings, a surprise team here in the divisional playoff
round.
Big
surprise,
pretty much, everybody outside of the land of 10,000 lakes thought it was going to be the Saints moving on, and they would have played the Packers, and it would have been the Seahawks.
How happy are you, though? You know, was he glowing on Monday?
You know what?
Was he glowing?
I will say that
I feel like you were glowing.
The team that worried me the most was probably the Saints.
Yeah.
Of course. And now you got the sixth seed on your home turf.
Yeah, but now I'm like, the Vikings are hot. So now there's
Are they
there's
really, though? They won one game.
Man, they went into the dome to do
no,
it.
No, I get it. Yeah. But the Saints, like, that's going to go down in history as, like, one of the most cursed postseason runs. And who knows, maybe they're going to make another one next season. You know, Breeze is, 41?
They'll have one more shot, probably.
I mean, you know, with the whole issue and that call that should have been made but wasn't on the PI last season, I mean, the Saints have had some really, I mean, they won the Super Bowl with Breeze, but I mean, overall, they've had some bad luck in playoffs, man.
So they are done. The Vikings move on. Dalvin Cook had another solid game, outstanding game against the Saints. Can he do that on the Niner defense? Do we have a level of confidence about Dalvin Cook against this?
I mean, that's obviously going to be the Vikings' game plan.
It's going to have to be.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the Niners gave up the fourth fewest fantasy points to visiting running backs. They were really tough on that position at home. They were giving up right around 16 fantasy points per game at that position on their home turf. So it's going to be a tough call.
We did see the 49ers' run defense start to kind of show some cracks at the end of the year, but they're getting healthy as this postseason wears along. They're you know, they basically get 2 weeks off here, and they're getting some key pieces back from injury. And you know, I know you're trying not to be super optimistic about your Niners, Marcus. But
dude,
such a better spot.
It's you're lined up for a rematch against Baltimore.
Yeah,
you really are.
Which I don't want to look that far ahead just yet.
I know, but I got to tell you,
you guys can go ahead.
The Packers don't scare me. If I'm a Niners fan, especially after you guys boat raced them earlier this year, Seattle, I mean, the Eagles lost Carson Wentz, and then that was basically the end of them. You guys are in a great, great spot. I'm not trying to, because I hope for you that they win it all, but they're in a really good spot.
They are, and if they get Dee Ford and Kwon Alexander back this week, like,
which they are expected to.
It looks like they're going to get both of those guys back, and even maybe Jaquiski Tartt, that's going to allow them a little more flexibility out wide.
Yeah.
It's humongous.
49ers are 4-1 in the postseason against the Vikings, including wins over the Vikings en route to Super Bowl victories, two Super Bowl victories. So, I mean, I remember this. You remember like those games where the Vikings had the old white jerseys with the purple and yellow on the shoulder pads.
I also feel like the one they lost, if I'm not mistaken, was the game where Anthony Carter just went berserk against
them. Anthony Carter.
Yeah. Okay. So you mentioned the Jaquiski Tartt back, which does add something to that secondary. Is Adam Thielen back? He finally had a big game. We had been waiting for this since he came back from injury. Finally saw that from him this past weekend. Does this mean he's for real back, or was this just sort of a one-game thing for him?
He's back. He's got to be back because he had so much time off between, you know, re-injuring the hand. He got hurt in week 7, then re-injured it in week 9, ended up basically not playing essentially for the rest of the season. Got a few targets in the final two games of the year, but clearly was not his full self. And then he got week 17 off. So he, with all that time off, and you know, we know how hamstring injuries can nag. Thielen is pretty clearly back, and that is huge for this Vikings team. I know we didn't see much of Stephon Diggs in the wild card round, but you know, having a fully healthy Thielen and Diggs is pretty huge for them, especially if the 49ers are going to get healthy themselves on defense.
By the way, Anthony Carter, 1987 against the 49ers, 10 catches for 227 yards.
Wow.
And the Vikings won 36-24. So, yeah, that's what I remember. On the flip side, for the 49ers, how much do we trust Raheem Mostert? I mean, he's been very good. He sort of has taken over that job, but that Viking run defense is very good. I mean, if you are playing a DFS lineup, do you dare throw Raheem Mostert in there anywhere?
I just think this week there's probably better running backs that you can trust more. You know, Dalvin Cook's going to be out there nearly every snap. Aaron Jones is going to have a big game. We'll see about Mark Ingram. We'll talk about here in a minute. But
right.
Mostert has definitely been good and taken over as the 49ers lead back. But like, you know, this is Kyle Shanahan. It's the playoffs. He's not going to leave any of his great plays in the bag here. He's going to use all three of his guys between Breida and Coleman as well. And I think Mostert will be fine. You know, he'll get his 15 touches, but I think there's probably better and more valuable running backs on this slate.
I mean, if you're playing playoff challenge, I would think Mostert is going to be the guy that you're going to want to put in there, because many of us
had
Alvin Kamara in there. And now Mark Ingram, like, I started him, and I mean, he's still dealing with this calf injury. I don't know what's going on with him. If you lose him, that stinks in playoff challenge, because you would have gotten the double points this week, but if you don't play, you ain't getting anything. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I did go with Mostert in my playoff challenge lineup because I did lose Alvin Kamara there. So looking at the Niners wide receiver, look, we know George Kittle is going to be George Kittle. He'll get his targets. He will make his plays. But if you are looking at the Niners wide receivers, Emmanuel Sanders or Deebo Samuel, pick one. Which one do you feel better about?
I think I'd go Deebo just for the yak ability, but they're both in great spots. I mean, I know Xavier Rhodes played pretty well last week, but the Vikings have been flammable on the boundary all year long, and Kyle Shanahan will get his guys in the right spots here.
Yeah, it's funny.
I agree.
Deebo Samuel has been like, I don't really know who to compare him to necessarily in the past. He's not a tall guy. I mean, he's not even 6 feet tall, but he's strong.
It's like he's like an oversized running back playing receiver.
That's good. That's fair. I was going to say maybe like an undersized Anquan Boldin.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. Boldin was amazing after the catch.
Absolutely.
Prime.
Absolutely. So that's all I can think about when I watch Deebo Samuel play there. All right. So there you go. Niners. That's Vikings at Niners. That game Saturday, the early game, 4:35 Eastern. The later game on Saturday is Titans at Ravens. That's an 8:15 scheduled kickoff there. The Titans, not to a lot of people's surprise, ended up going into Foxborough and winning, beating the Patriots there. So I don't know how many people came away shocked from that. I feel like they were sort of the popular upset special pick of the week. Ryan Tannehill was fine. He wasn't great in that game. This week against the Ravens, will we have hashtag Tanna Thrill or hashtag Tanna Fail?
This sort of seems like it's going to be just like a low-scoring smash mouth, because these teams are very similar, right? Mm-hmm. What do they both want to do? Run the football, right? The basis of both of these offenses are having success on the ground. And if the Titans can get Derrick Henry going, I feel like the Ravens probably didn't want to see the Titans. This is a team that is playing well. They just came off of beating the Patriots. I know they lost to the Saints in the regular season, but they gave them everything they possibly could. This is going to be a fun game to watch. If you like defense and old school grinding it out, you know, Henry getting 25 carries in this game. I don't know who the running back's going to be for the Ravens at this point, because Mark Ingram, as we mentioned, is still dealing with that injury. This is going to be a fun, fun game to watch. And I think Ryan Tannehill is not going to be asked to do too much in this game because of what their philosophy is going to end up being.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of what happened last week. They didn't ask him to do a lot. He didn't have to
do a lot.
Yeah. Right. Derrick Henry pretty much literally carried this team to victory, and it may be the same thing again this week. So, which leads me to my next question, Derrick Henry versus the Ravens defense. Who you got?
It's tough to bet against Derrick Henry.
Okay, dude.
Ravens run defense they'll tighten up. They're at home. Obviously have a lot of talent up front there to stop the run, but Derrick Henry has just been a man possessed. Fully healthy, obviously off that hamstring injury. I mean, he's just gone ballistic in his last two games that we've seen him.
He's had a lot of postseason success. Yeah. Even though it's a short sample size, he's done really well in the postseason. And if he keeps riding like this, look, he's going to be a top five pick next season.
All I know is the Titans are going to have to throw way more than 15 times in this game.
No,
absolutely.
But you know though? If I'm a Titans fan, I have confidence in Tannehill because he looked great down the stretch.
I do too. But my God, I mean, the Patriots offense just could not muster anything. So and the Titans just played that super conservatively on offense. They're going to have to open it up big time in this game because Lamar is going to be able to expose some of the deficiencies the Titans have in their secondary because, you know, I know it was the Patriots last week. Their defense looked good. But, you know, previously the Titans, basically since the middle of the season, have been an average to slightly below average pass defense.
On the other side, Mark Ingram, and you mentioned it, Fabs, is dealing with this calf injury. In fact, the Greg Roman is speaking right now. I can tell because my Twitter feed keeps popping up with quotes from him. They are saying that Mark Ingram is day-to-day. He's got that calf injury. He didn't practice on Tuesday. Now, last week, he apparently was able to practice, seemed like he was on track to play. And then this week, something kind of tightened up on him, and now they're sort of holding him back as a precautionary measure. I mean, do we have any confidence in this recovery that he's going to be able to play? And if not, Gus Edwards, Justice Hill, which one of these guys intrigues you?
Yeah, Gus the Bus. He got a lot of carries the last time the Ravens were out there on the field. I really think he is. They're going to use both because, you know, Gus Edwards gives you nothing as a pass catcher, so they're going to utilize Justice Hill as well. But, I mean, again, in playoff challenge, if you started Ingram like I did, you're hoping he plays, but this kind of stinks. It makes it tough. And this also, it doesn't give the Titans a massive advantage, but, you know, the Ravens losing a guy who scored double-digit touchdowns and is a big-time part of that offense, if he can't play or if he's at less than 100%, the Titans are have a nice advantage there in that backfield matchup.
Gus Edwards is a massive value, too, in DFS this week if Ingram is out. They'll get Justice Hill involved for sure as a change-of-pace guy, but Edwards, every single time we've seen him, even dating back to when it was originally just him and Lamar in 2018 when Lamar was a rookie, like, he's a very good downhill runner. He can certainly grind out some big-time yards.
Any non-Mark Andrews Ravens pass catchers that you believe in? Any that you would maybe take a YOLO play on, sort of?
Marquise Brown is cheap. He's cheap. He's only going to see 4 or 5 targets, maybe.
You just hope one of them ends in the end zone.
Exactly, but you hope one of them is like 70 yards downfield and he splashes on it. Yeah. I mean, Marquise Brown is always a fun, like, kind of, just dart throw type play for DFS. But other than that, like, if they spread it around, they'll get the ball to Wilson Eade, especially if Mark Ingram's out, too. They'll probably rely on Mark Andrews a little bit more, too, as a pass catcher.
Yeah, I mean, Tennessee, you know, they gave up nearly 9 catches to perimeter receivers. It's sort of near the top of the National Football League in terms of the most. So, yeah, He's one of those dart throws, man. He's certainly one of the dart throws, and I don't know that they're going to change the offense drastically or at all if Mark Ingram can't play, but you know that could open up some more opportunities for Hollywood.
The Titans not having Adoree Jackson too is potentially huge. He's their speed corner, and that's one of their guys that could keep up with Marquise Brown. He could return this week. He played for the Patriots but didn't practice on Tuesday. He's still really banged up.
Yeah, I'd say Mark Andrews also limited in practice, although it looks like he's going to play, so we'll see. Moving on to the Sunday games, we'll start with the Texans and Chiefs. That is the early one, 3:05 Eastern time. All right, pick one, Carlos Hyde or Duke Johnson. Last week we did this, Fabs, and I don't think we picked wrong, but early on there was a whole lot of Duke Johnson, which sort of surprised me. By the end, Carlos Hyde sort of, I won't say took over, but he ended up being the top running back. But so let's do this again. Carlos Hyde or Duke Johnson? Where would we go for this one?
Do we have to?
I mean, the Chiefs' run defense hasn't been good this year.
Yeah.
Down the stretch, it wasn't as bad. I mean, and Hyde, you know, 16 carries for 48 yards. That ain't all that great. You know, he had a 5-yard touchdown catch. That was it. So, you know, if I'm leaning on Carlos Hyde to, you know, catch passes, I'm not a fan of either. I had to pick one because I know the touches are going to be there, it'll be Carlos Hyde. But Kansas City's defense played really, really good down the stretch.
Yeah. Chiefs run defense is really, really good. But Hyde has been like one of the most game script dependent running backs in the NFL. When the Texans lose, I mean, Carlos Hyde is basically unusable for fantasy. And for better or worse, I mean, Duke Johnson I mean, he only gets a couple carries in the game, but he's, you know, he's involved as a pass catcher there for sure. And if the Texans get down, it'll be DJ.
If you're a Bears fan, can you possibly watch this game? Do you know where I'm going with this?
I mean, just because you're sweating those Trubisky bullets.
Patrick Mahomes.
And Deshaun Watson.
Against Deshaun Watson, both of whom could have been wearing Chicago Bears uniforms if the Bears were smart.
If they didn't get hornswoggled into trading up for a guy that the 49ers had no intention of taking whatsoever.
John Lynch absolutely stole Ryan Pace's lunch money.
Seriously, I'm saying, like, if I'm a Bears fan, I can't even watch that game. Every time Watson makes a play, that was amazing. That guy is Houdini, what he did against Buffalo last week, avoiding that sack. And, you know, Mahomes is Mahomes. You got to be sick. You got to be sick. Sick.
All right. So along that line, choose your fighter, Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes this week.
I love Mahomes, but I'm going with Watson here. Just because every single time we've seen the Texans get behind, Watson has to put the team on his shoulders. He just goes nuts for fantasy. Not only just trying to push the ball down the field aggressively, they might get Will Fuller back this week too, finally.
I saw that he is still dealing with a groin injury up in the air at the moment.
Will Fuller's natural state is day-to-day. So,
based on the numbers, you're taking Watson, I would think, because he's about $1,000 cheaper on DraftKings than Mahomes.
He's cheaper.
$800.
And if the Chiefs get ahead in this game and Watson has to chase in the second half, I mean, that's just, it's always bananas for fantasy.
And he is still, he's definitely more likely than Patrick Mahomes to get you a rushing touchdown as well.
For sure.
So that's definitely worth bringing into play. Any Chiefs that you'd consider beyond the big three, right? Mahomes, Kelce Hill, those guys are going to be in a lot of lineups. Anybody that you would even look at beyond?
Look, I know Damian Williams burned a lot of people this year, myself included. But
finish strong.
Past two games, he was quietly reinserted as the Chiefs' top back in Week 16. Saw 19 touches, followed that up with another 16 in Week 17. Every time we've seen Damian Williams on the field, especially since he got healthy in middle of the season, he's been really good. He's produced for fantasy. It's just the injuries that have been a big problem for him. And obviously the Chiefs have clearly, you know, LeSean McCoy's clearly fallen out of favor there in that backfield, and they really don't have anything else. They don't trust Darwin Thompson. So I'm expecting a big workload for Damian Williams here. Now he's fully healthy and he's got another week off.
Houston gave up the fifth most fantasy points to running backs during the regular season. They gave up 4.6 yards per carry, he could end up being a pretty decent value this week, no question about that. And if you think the Chiefs are going to the Super Bowl,
he's a huge value.
He's a nice playoff challenge option.
There you go. All right, last game of the weekend, Seahawks at Packers. That is Sunday night, 6:40 Eastern time kickoff. Is DK Metcalf the wide receiver one in Seattle now?
I mean, it looks like it.
Right?
Although we did call that last week because Philadelphia has been awful against perimeter receivers. Awful. Terrible. I mean, and DK Metcalf, which I think they have a drink now for him, right?
They have a drink for him. Some company now. Like in Georgia or something.
How the hell did he fall in the draft?
Because he had a bad three-cone drill.
I mean, who gives a rat's patootie? Overall, though,
all the time in the combine, NFL game, he was like, to run around three cones.
How did he fall that far?
One of the craziest spectacles I've ever seen in any sporting environment. It was simply watching DK Metcalf run the 40 live, where you and I were there.
I remember sitting there, and it was weird because for those of you, I know most people don't get to go to the combine. They don't put on the board what the time is, but now in this digital age with Twitter, people who are watching it on TV are posting the time, and you could hear this murmur just go through the crowd. I had never
seen anything like that before. I don't know if Metcalf's their number one because Tyler Lockett's just that damn good, but DK and Tyler together for the next couple years with Russell Wilson, could you imagine? There's literally not a better pairing for Russell Wilson in terms of just like what we know Russ loves to do, dropping the ball in the bucket, getting his guys in terms of timing, and Metcalf has just proven to be such a great, great asset for them and such a perfect fit for this offense.
It's DK Metcalf's season, I think, speaks to sometimes our over-reliance on drills at the combine, but also having a coaching staff that can understand your strengths and weaknesses.
Exactly.
And allow you to – look, everybody talked about how bad his three-cone drill was. It's like, okay, well, then we'll have you run routes that don't necessarily involve that.
And he landed in a spot where a team had just lost, their number one wide receiver in Doug Baldwin, who decided to, walk off into the sunset there and retire.
Yeah.
And the opportunity, boom, was right there.
You just wait until DK Metcalf can consistently run out routes, because if he can start just making one or two extra moves in terms of instead of just moving straight in a moving very fast in a straight line going downfield or across the field, if he can develop and, you know, get an out route or something like that to kind of just throw off defenders a little bit more, he is going to be completely unstoppable. He might already be completely unstoppable.
I can't wait for the offseason narratives if he ends up going to like a couple of yoga classes to get loose. And stuff. That was like the big knock on him, right? Like he needs to do some yoga, do some stretching.
Oh my God.
Like I can't wait to see like, you know, Instagrams of him at like Pilates or something like that.
Shocker.
Crazy.
Shocker. A dude who is what, 229, 230 and runs 4.3 flat nearly is good at football.
Who would have thought?
Weird. I mean, and look at the wide receivers that went ahead of him. You know, like you're looking
JJ Arcega-Whiteside went ahead of him.
Yeah, Paris Campbell, although, you know, the jury's still out. Andy Isabella, the jury's still out. But imagine, I mean, if the Patriots had taken him at the end of the first round instead of N'Keal Harry, although I still think N'Keal Harry
will be
fine. But, oh my goodness, that would have been
big
help for the Patriots.
Eagles have to be kicking themselves on Metcalf because they desperately needed somebody to stretch the field all year long, and they never got it.
Well, I think they were hoping DeSean Jackson.
They wanted to be DeSean Jackson, but his injury situation was completely mishandled.
That's a side note. I mean, is this the last we've seen of DeSean Jackson? Do you think
he was working out in anticipation to come back.
All right.
He'll probably give it one more shot.
Yeah. Just curious. So we talked about the Seahawks wide receivers. Can either of you paint me a picture where you start Travis Homer in DFS this week?
I don't think so. They're going to try and get, for better or worse, they're going to get Beast Mode involved too.
I think Lynch is getting ready. You know, I think he's going to see more of the workload though. So that would be, I mean, Homer's actually more expensive than Lynch. I can't.
Yeah. And Pete Carroll on Monday. And I know everyone has been burnt by Pete Carroll saying things, us trusting him for fantasy. Pete Carroll said on Monday that Marshawn Lynch is going to play more this week.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I do believe that. For better or worse.
No, I believe it as well. I mean, I think they want to sort of get... Look, let's remember, this guy has taken over a year off from playing actual tackle football.
If nothing else, he's got fresh legs.
Right. And, like, he still looks good in short yardage situations. I mean, he had some of those classic beast mode runs where he's just churning his legs and running people over. You know, as he said himself, run through a bleep's face over and over. Like he did that
over,
a couple times.
Over,
right?
And over and over and over again.
That's one of his classic quotes there. All right. So Travis Homer, probably not gonna be in a whole lot of lineups this week. Aaron Rodgers. I feel like we are over the muscle memory of just throwing Aaron Rodgers in lineups, right? Like I feel like it took most of the season, but we have sort of gotten that out of our systems now. Yeah. He's been just an average quarterback for much of the year. Does the muscle memory come back and we're like, hey, it's playoff Aaron Rodgers? Or do we still look at what happened in the regular season and we're like, maybe not so fast?
No, that's where I'm at.
I'm there too. I mean, yeah. It's taken a lot for Rodgers to have big games. I mean, he threw for 300 yards in week 17, but it took him 55 pass attempts to get there. And then he obviously nuked the Raiders and Giants this year. And then outside of that, it's really not been much production fantasy-wise. They've really been a balanced offense with LaFleur there. And I expect that this week too. Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams will both be heavily involved in their running game. And Packers are going to be a balanced team this week.
Hard to trust Rodgers for me. It really is. And Seattle's actually been tougher against quarterbacks on the road than they were at home this season too.
Yeah,
four fewer points on the road.
I would much rather just play Russ. I mean, there's so many quarterbacks on this slate that we could like between, you know, Watson, Mahomes, Jackson, of course, and Russell Wilson still cheap. I mean, there's just better plays on this slate.
Yep.
So then that leads me to the next question. Then beyond Devontae Adams, Aaron Jones, I guess maybe Jamal Williams. Anybody else?
Want to get weird?
Yeah,
you want to get real weird? You can play Alan Lazard, maybe. Lazard's been a full-time
Lazard
player.
King. Yeah.
Hey, he's been a full time player for them. He's popped a little bit in the box score, but other than that, that's it.
But we're forgetting, it's a Jimmy Graham revenge game.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
It is.
I don't mean, I'm telling you to play Jimmy Graham, but it is a Jimmy Graham.
Generally forgot about Jimmy Graham.
Well, fantasy as a whole we've forgotten about him.
You're not alone there.
It's been a rough go for Jimmy Graham recently, man. You want to talk about a guy who's fallen off from where he was at his peak in New Orleans to now, man. So, all right, should be a fun weekend of games. I don't know, anything big I missed? Anything that jumps out to you guys that we didn't talk about in these four games?
I don't think so. Right. I think we're good, man. It's going to be a fun weekend. Yep. It's going to be a really fun weekend, and especially for Marcus here.
I know. Well, I got to figure out, you know, I got to figure out somewhere to watch the game on Saturday. I've got, you know, I have relationship duties that I have to do.
Those are tough, aren't they?
I know. I have like birthdays, big birthdays coming up, and so I have to sort of negotiate time to at least watch that 49er Viking game. So we'll see how that works out. Otherwise, I'm going to be like staring at my phone all around trying to do things that. I don't know how well that's going to go over, but we'll find out.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, where do we wrap this thing up? If you play fantasy football, if you play DFS, if you are just on Twitter and follow people on football Twitter, you probably know about this DraftKings deal here. The Bachelor and the Bachelor's wife. Is that how we're describing this now?
It's Jade Roper.
Jade Roper.
She was on The Bachelor.
Right, but then her husband was also right. on The Bachelorette.
Right.
Neither one of them, quote unquote, won. I don't watch the show enough to know if you win or lose. Whatever.
Enough or ever.
Both.
Yeah.
You win the publicity at all times.
Sure. Yeah. So Jade Roper Tolbert and Tanner Tolbert, they were both on the respective versions of the show. Neither was picked by The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, but what they met on Bachelor in Paradise.
Yep.
And got married. And now, Jade Roper Tolbert, won the Millie Maker on DraftKings, which, you know, I don't know, seems like, I guess, a fun story. Here you are, a reality TV star, now you win $1 million, and I mean, it seems good publicity for both sides. But, hold on, there is suspicion that this was a little bit not above board, that the two of them combined to go over the 150 entries that are allowed there. I mean, chances are you probably read this story. They had a combined, allegedly, 300 entries. So people are mad. DraftKings is investigating. And actually, this little bit of news that popped up as we were talking earlier, the runner-up in that contest has hired a lawyer by the name of Alan Milstein. Some of the other high-profile cases Alan Milstein has had. He has actually worked on behalf of Allen Iverson, Carmelo Anthony, Maurice Clarett. So he is involved very much in law that surrounds sports and, you know, I guess sports betting in this case, if you will. First thing is, just one, it just makes me laugh that, like, I don't think this is as big a story if there's nobody from The Bachelor involved, right? If it's just a random person who works at, like, you know, Ralph's, you know, it's not as big a deal. But I guess my question is, are people really mad, or are they mad that, like, they, because I am hard pressed to believe that these are the only people who have somehow pooled entries to get around this.
Exactly. This mm-hmm. this happens, I won't say every week, and I won't pretend to know who all does this, but this happens on large scale almost every single week in DFS, in max multi-enter tournaments, because you can enter up to 150 lineups, like you said, just as one person. And, you know, it makes, I mean, it's just an easy way to cheat. You kind of keep your player exposures the same. What they did was actually they used, the Ropers both used, like, I think Jade used all the quarterbacks from the NFC, and he used all the quarterbacks from the AFC. So they split their exposures that way.
Got it.
And they both had like a bunch of DK Metcalf. Look, I think people are probably mad that they didn't win, but at the same time, I could also understand there are, you know, legitimate DFS players that are upset that this has been something that's been ongoing, an ongoing problem in DFS, people colluding, and it just hasn't been addressed. And the only reason it might be addressed now is because, like you mentioned, Marcus, they're celebrities.
So so that's my next question, though, is how, and I don't know from a programming standpoint or a, you know, coding development standpoint, because that's not my bag, how to prevent it. Because it always feels like there's going to be some workaround. I mean, at the dawn of DFS, you had people, you know, basically dropping code into the thing.
Right, and, employees.
Right, you know, and just like building massive numbers of lineups. You know, look, it's like buying more lottery tickets, right? Like, the chances of you hitting are greater. I always feel like, you know, those who want to get around the restrictions are always going to be a step ahead of everything.
It would be really hard for one of these sites to step in and like regulate, you know, players against colluding. It'd almost be impossible.
Right.
You're relying on, I mean, I don't even know what system would be in place. So you'd have to like go in to every single player entries lineup, like before lineups locked, essentially, and just try to see if there's some sort of overlap between all the max multi entry, and that could, you know, lead you down your own rabbit hole,
right?
You know,
and this is also I feel like, you know, obviously the NFL is you know in business with DraftKings to a point, and I feel like that's a big part of the reason why the NFL is not going full in. They're not jumping into that DFS pool completely because this kind of stuff happens, and the NFL doesn't want their name associated with this kind of thing. As NFL employees, we all well know, you know, if you get caught gambling on team sports, you're not going to have a job anymore. We can't play DFS for any sort of monetary, you know, reward.
If you watch Fantasy Live when we do our DM, you see a big giant disclaimer.
Yes,
at the bottom
right.
Of the
I mean, I do. You know, game day morning, and this big giant thing is on the bottom. So the NFL is, and it's smart. And some people may think, well, it's hypocritical for the NFL to be taking money from these places but not actually allowing their employees to participate or promoting it. It's not, though, because this kind of thing happens. And now we're seeing this again, and the people who are going to be the critics of the NFL or Daily Fantasy, DraftKings, et cetera, are going to come and jump all over this thing and say, well, there's people out there who are cheating, and it's going to cause an issue. And obviously we're going to potentially see here, as you mentioned, a lawsuit in this scenario. But this kind of stuff is really what I believe, in part, keeps the NFL from jumping totally into that DFS pool. Because if you guys remember, I mean, and you know, I've been doing this for 20 years now, the NFL initially didn't even want to get involved in fantasy football. The
right.
NFL
Correct.
Didn't have its own product. They were using CBS Sportsline or ESPN, and they were just putting the NFL brand on there. They didn't have their own in-house product until, what, five, six years ago. And when they decide, well, geez, you know, we've got to jump on the bandwagon here, and we're going to say, hey, this is not gambling for us because, you know, for example, you know, Dante Culpepper doesn't play on the same team as LaDainian Tomlinson or, you know, Calvin Johnson, whatever the case may be, because it's just fantasy. This here is a little bit different because there are people who play fantasy football in the traditional sense for fun, whereas DFS, you're playing to get paid.
Right, which also, and hey, look, this is me just sort of galaxy braining this thing, right? I know everybody sort of wants to have a level playing field, and I guess maybe that's why you limit the number of entries that you put in there.
Mm-hmm.
This thing is never, especially I think on the DFS side, it's never going to be fully level, right? You're going to have people with a deeper knowledge base, with just flat out more time to do this.
Yep. And more money.
And more money. To put in. And I think that's the biggest thing, right?
That is at 100% the biggest thing. The biggest barrier to entry with DFS, frankly, it's not skill. Because, I mean, if you haven't played DFS any given week, you could, you know, step in and beat all of the pros for
right.
1 week. You could do it. Seriously, you could do it. It happens. The biggest barrier for entry is money. And not everybody has, you know, 150 lineups at $20 a pop. Not, you know, that's a lot of money. Not everybody has that money to, you know, to pop that into a tournament.
Which, you know, I think in some ways I don't think it's a coincidence. It is why this is sort of mirrors, I think, the poker craze of the early 2000s, especially online, where, you know, you if you have a bigger pot, you can tend to sort of, you know, bully your way into winning bigger money. I think in some ways this sort of mirrors that. This ended up being kind of more of a substantial, less funny discussion.
I mean,
it's good. No, I'm like, I think it's totally cool. You know, it started off sort of as a joke because The Bachelor was involved in this thing. But I think this is not the last we've heard of this. I'm curious to see what happens with this lawsuit. I also, you know, the skeptic in me thinks that something like this is going to happen again. I don't know how soon. I don't know how often. But, you know, the odds say that it is going to happen again very soon.
I just went on to Twitter, and the Redskins welcomed Scott Turner, and I clicked on his Twitter, and he follows me.
Oh,
hey,
that's cool.
Maybe I can get Redskins.
Follow
right back at you, Scott. Hit me up.
Ask if we can get some more Terry McLaurin love,
please,
during the season.
Love it.
That'd be great.
I will do that.
All right. I think that's enough. I think we're done. We appreciate you downloading and listening, as always. You know the drill. Tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, if someone tells you you're a skeptic, don't believe a word they say. We'll see you on Monday.